Hey, welcome back to This Week in Asia. Yeah, it's after Chinese New Year, and this is our 150th episode. Sorry, 105th episode. Sorry, I just jumped the gun. But yeah, most of our friends, they're busy. Bernard is getting married pretty soon. Mike Fong is busy as usual with his job. And Smitty, he has a big announcement, but I will let him get to it when he's here. So we have this guest that we're trying to get for a very long time, Benjamin Joff. Benjamin, welcome to the show. We call you Jermin, right?
Yeah, so hi everyone. I'm very happy to be finally on the show.
Yeah. You're from Plus8Star and you're currently working on a new project called They Did. Can you just explain to our audience what Plus8Star is about?
Sure. So Plus8Star is a consulting company I created and I've been running for 8 years now. And the focus of the company has been since the beginning to identify innovation from Asia. So it's something a bit counterintuitive maybe for people outside Asia.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But essentially, it's been about identifying new service concepts and proven business models that are already working here and could be working elsewhere.
So one of the things our audience need to know, you are French.
I mean, yes.
And how did you find yourself in Asia, actually, in the first place?
I guess when around the time I graduated, I wasn't so excited. And I didn't feel I wanted to be like go to a regular job, I guess. And I was interested in Japan at that time. And I had studied some Japanese on top of engineering. And I decided to join a strategy consultancy based in Tokyo. And that was basically my first move there. And then from Tokyo, I moved to Korea, from Korea to China, from China to Singapore, then a little bit US. And now I'm in Malaysia. And it's been like over 10 years now. That I've been around those countries, so mostly in Japan and China.
And throughout these 10 years, I mean, what was the most shocking thing that you have seen about Asia?
I'd say there have been like a lot of surprises, and each place had its own set of surprises. But I would say that what I find the most interesting, that took me like the most time to understand, is actually that Asia, in a way, doesn't really exist in the way we think of it, because it's so diverse that it almost makes no sense to talk about Asia if you put in the same group Japan, China, Singapore, the Philippines, Vietnam, Laos. Like those markets, those populations, those cultures are so different. It's I think Asia is just the term Asia is just a legacy of a very Western-centric view of the world.
Well, it's a very Greek-centric of the world, in fact, actually.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so that was the latest project they did. What is it about, and why are you building it in Malaysia?
Yeah, so after working a lot with startups, I finally, at the beginning of last year, I got an idea on my own that I couldn't really get rid of, and I decided to research more. And the idea came from two things. It came from my feeling that both Twitter and Facebook were so cluttered by noise that it was very increasingly hard to find signals. So I don't know if there's anybody left who's actually reading everything on the Twitter or Facebook. Mm-hmm. I gave up already some time ago, and that made me realize that there was actually very little that was really important. Or what was important, there was a good chance I won't see it because it will just disappear in the stream in 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. Second thing, I've been involved in a lot of events, and I run myself close to 40 events in China. I realized that a lot of people were coming to me to ask questions such as, I'm looking for somebody to hire, I'm looking for a job, I'm looking for a contact, I'm looking for information. And they were asking all those things. And because in each of the events I was running, I had about 100 executives from the telecom and internet and mobile industry.
Yeah.
Very often, the answer to the question was in the room. So I realized there was something strange that and inefficient that people had to come to me as a hub to basically point for me to point them to their neighbor. So I started to think about that, and I realized that basically we could very often leverage knowledge that our friends have, but we don't even know they have it, and because we don't ask them, and they don't ask us what we need. So basically, the focus of Daydeed is more or less tapping into the wisdom of friends.
Okay. So, and I've seen Daydeed, and you're building the whole thing in Malaysia.
Yes.
And how did this came about, this actually?
Well, it's a great question, because people think that we can only build innovative companies in Silicon Valley, or that as soon as you have something that looks a little bit innovative, you should be there. Mm-hmm. And there's even a larger group of people who think that only innovation only happens there, even though the reality is that a lot of innovation moves to Silicon Valley. Even Facebook wasn't in Silicon Valley initially. So the reason I thought about building it in Malaysia is that this kind of a combination of reasons. First is realizing through two investments I've made in startups in Asia that you could build a global startup from pretty much anywhere. Mm-hmm. So I invested in a company in Beijing, a social gaming company doing 3D games called Simune, and they built the largest first-person shooter on Facebook called UberStrike. It's very high-tech product, and it's very innovative, and it's based in Beijing, where, I mean, even Facebook is blocked there, so that kind of extra difficulty, right?
Yeah, this is it's a very nice game, actually.
Yeah, so the company was building high-tech software, high-technology from Beijing. Another company invested in is called MyGango. It's a translation platform, and it's based in Tokyo. Uh-huh. And because the target is translation, the market for them is really global. So I realized through those two examples of companies that are being successful having revenue, they both of them raised funding from very prominent investors, and both teams are growing and doing really well, and I think it promised a really nice future. So I realized that to actually build something amazing, you didn't need to be in Silicon Valley. What you needed is a few very good guys, a few smart guys, good enough infrastructure, uh-huh, and access to resources.
Okay.
So that's what I realized. And then in terms of location, I had different choices. I considered San Francisco. I considered Beijing because I lived there for 5 years, and I know a lot of people there. Uh-huh. I considered Singapore. And then I started to consider the rest of Asia because I was in the neighborhood. So I ruled out San Francisco because I talked to a lot of entrepreneur friends who told me that hiring people in San Francisco at the moment is worse than it was 10 years ago. It's super difficult. It's very pricey. And basically, the really good guys, like the top 10% of developers, they're just, you won't get them. Unless you have your network, unless you manage to convince, like you have a good, really good, talented friend. But otherwise, those guys, either they join more prominent companies or they want to start their own thing.
Well, we know Facebook is probably going for IPO, and a lot of them would have joined companies like Facebook to try to get some money through the IPO.
Yeah, but even for, the past, anybody who joined Facebook in the past year, the upside for IPO is going to be very little.
Yeah. Exactly.
So it doesn't make much difference now. It's just a good engineering company at the moment, a software company, you could say. There's a lot of them recruiting. Zynga, Facebook, Twitter, all have now staff in the hundreds, if not in the thousands, and they tend to attract like really good engineers. Microsoft's still attracting people.
Google,
of course. So Amazon, eBay, so there's lots of competition. So it's very hard to find people, it's very expensive, and basically it's very hard to access the right guys. So I looked at Beijing, and I considered Beijing because the cost is really competitive, even though it's getting more expensive. The problem is that I want to build a global company, and when I say global, it's probably targeting initially English-speaking markets, mm-hmm, which are, for me, more familiar, and also higher GDP per capita. So it's better market.
Okay.
And the problem is that in China, the best engineers speak really good Chinese, but not so good English.
Okay, cool. So you went around Asia and you found some really talented developers.
Yeah. Exactly. So that's thanks to introductions, I actually found really, really good guys. And I think with just a handful of smart guys, you can build amazing things from anywhere. The question is, are you able to access the markets you want? Are you able to finance the project? So this is the part I'm taking care of.
Well, we will want to get back to this a bit more later. But sure. First we would like to, before we actually move into the news, and we'll probably just follow up in terms of how people can get involved in Daydit at the end of the show. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, Audible. Yes, we do have a sponsor this episode. Audible is actually...
Thanks, Audible.
Yeah, so if you want to actually get a 14 days trial, you can actually head to audibletrial.com/TWIA. to get your one credit, and you can actually get a free book, free audiobook out of it. And the book that I'm going to recommend, actually, Ben, do you have any book that audiobook that you want to recommend? Are you on Audible?
I'm more of like a ebook, but not audiobook too much. So I don't have one, but which one I read recently? Well, it doesn't come to mind, but if I think of one, I'll do a shootout.
Okay, so I guess I have to recommend the one about Steve Jobs by Walter Isaacson. Yeah, that is a fantastic book. I think it's close to about 10 hours, and you can actually get it free right now if you head to audibletrial.com/TWIA. Okay, so let's start on with the news. I guess we start off with the biggest news of all in terms of ACTA is soon to be approved. Singapore signed in, and I think they are debating over in Europe how is it going to be. What are your thoughts about ACTA? And ACTA is the anti-counterfeit treaty. Hold on, let me get this.
The SOPA of Europe, right?
Well, it's the global SOPA, actually. It's ACTA stands for Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement, and it doesn't have to go through approval process. In fact, when a country signs on to this trade agreement, they have to implement a sort of a SOPA kind of thing. And what do you think about this kind of censorship that is happening? These kind of rules are actually quite bad, in fact. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, to be frank, I haven't looked enough into it to really comment in a knowledgeable way. Mm-hmm. But I do recognize that it's really complicated to manage intellectual property and freedom of speech frankly on that topic I just find really a pity that. Laws that have so much impact do not involve a public discourse and a more public debate and discussion to involve the public, which is the major party in this.
I think there's also a lot to really go through. If you really want to read it about ACTA, the Wikipedia entry is pretty accurate. But at the moment in Asia, the countries that have signed on to ACTA as of now is Japan, Singapore, and South Korea. So the rest of the countries that are involved in the negotiation have not really signed on. But if this is implemented globally, there could be a problem. So read up about it and look at... if you hate SOPA, ACTA is even worse.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's jump ahead with another censorship news, in fact. Twitter recently just implemented their censorship for their posts. And any countries can actually go ask for a takedown notice in terms of censoring a tweet. But the tweet will appear censored in the country that is being taken down, and it will appear in the rest of the world. And Thailand, which actually had... previous history of trying to censor stuff on the internet, they are the first country in the world to support this censorship. Ben, what are your points about this?
I understand that some governments might want to protect, let's say, the movement of information, and also have a way. You know, in every country, publications and media have to report to governments. Mm-hmm. And the internet is kind of special because it's kind of a meta-national type of communication. So I think the problem is how the question is framed. Like, is it censorship? Or is it... there's different ways to frame it, really. Like, is it preventing the abuse of free speech? Like, for example, in the UK, there's a very, very stringent libel regulation. So if you basically complain about somebody or something, you have to be able to more or less back it up. And if you do it on Twitter, then which is the relevant legal body, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's... it's quite interesting because, in a way, it's the physical frontiers between countries still exist, and the question is how can countries maintain some of their sovereignty, right? So with trade barriers going down already, they're losing economic sovereignty. With currencies also being tied to other currencies, they're losing control over the economy. So it's I'd say it's a this type of regulation is an attempt to maintain the sovereignty of countries. It's another way to put it, rather than look at the censorship aspect.
I mean, if you look at the incidents like SOPA, ACTA, and this Twitter censorship from countries, mm-hmm. I mean, do you think like most governments at this point in time do not know how to handle the internet, or are they still treating it as old media?
I think most countries have no idea how to handle things. Actually, there's a few countries who actually do have an idea. Mm-hmm. China, has extreme expertise in filtering information and selecting content. Okay. They're very, very good at it. And I think other countries are actually learning from China. Because a lot of people were thinking that, internet is global, internet cannot be controlled. Well, China is proving that you can have... in one country, social networks, microblogs, and yet still totally control or almost totally control the flow of information.
But isn't it really against the spirit of information wants to be free and most of the terms?
That's what we hear all the time, that information wants to be free, the internet is open. Frankly, the internet started as a military project, so it wasn't really exactly free. It was free for exchanging between scientists to basically work on military things.
Yeah.
So, frankly, I have no idea where the spirit of the internet is written down, but I don't see it when I look at the cables.
So let's not talk about that. Let's figure out in terms of. You can still go and find a way to tunnel out of the Great Firewall of China if you want to in China.
Again, the point is not necessarily to block entirely things. The point is to make things difficult. You know how much dropout you get on the homepage if you have to do two clicks instead of one,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So if you need to now count the number of clicks you need to install a VPN and to wait for the pages to load due to terrible, bottlenecks in international bandwidth. Slowing things down can be as efficient as trying to cut it entirely.
Okay. So, in a way, I guess we're probably going to look at is it a maturing of the internet, or is that how it's always been?
I would say the internet was totally out of control until very recently. And countries are starting to realize that in some cases they'd better try to apply this similar level of control than they have on other type of media. I guess it's more about countries and governments and people in power realizing the danger and the disruptive effect of a media that they don't control, and realizing that beyond just a technology infrastructure with cables, it's actually a media. Mm-hmm. So it's... It's been a long time in the making, and also people, users of the internet had to mature. Like the first few years were spent playing games on browsing porn, but now I'd say people are in a more activist and engaged phase, and I would say finally that now that the technology is more in the background, the social effects become really interesting, and I'm kind of like half paraphrasing thinker about on the internet and about this. So basically, when the technology becomes less complicated or less visible, mm-hmm. then that's when the social effects become interesting, and finally the government is taking notice because of that.
Okay, interesting. So I guess this is something we probably have to monitor, and it's going to be an ongoing debate over at the disorganization.
Yeah. Yeah, there's going to be like there's going to be a swaying from the like the internet and the voices of the people and from governments trying to adjust. So this is definitely going to be an evolving piece.
Okay, so now let's from talking about the internet, we move on to a non-story in China, essentially about Apple and Foxconn. And we've been hearing about this for a while in terms of the harsh working condition in Foxconn, and Apple is Foxconn's biggest customer, and there's a lot of finger pointing in that Apple should do something about it. Find a better way to give a better working environment to Foxconn. I mean, you've been. What are your thoughts about this?
So it's interesting you mentioned this news, because I actually had a discussion following a post of a friend of mine on Facebook, and then I had some discussion with people in the comments. I think there's a lot of issues that are wrapped into one. First, you have to put things into perspective. The working conditions of people at Foxconn are probably not worse and probably better than the working condition of any unqualified worker in a Chinese factory. Mm-hmm. So by no means it's fantastic, but it's unqualified work in China, a country that is still developing, that has a GDP per capita that is one-tenth of the U.S. So you cannot provide like hotel rooms with plasma TVs for all the work for every single worker with those conditions. It just wouldn't work. So first is that to some extent, I think we're kind of applying first world standards to what is still a developing economy. So that's one thing. Another thing is having a company that is bypassing some regulations and trying to hide what they're doing from auditors. So this is more like the illegal aspect of things.
Yeah.
And the third is the social conscience of consumers who maybe not feeling very comfortable with the way their goods are produced. So I would say Apple is singled out because it's a massive company and because it's very visible. But, I mean, there's not much difference in the way things are produced in an Apple factory and whatever plastic object you're buying at the Walmart. It's all made in Chinese factories, pretty much. When you buy toys for Christmas, like 80 or 90% of the world's toys are made in China.
Yeah.
I don't think the factories are any better than what Foxconn is doing. Probably worse, because they have they're under less scrutiny. So, of course, improving the conditions of the workers would be good, but of course this has a cost. So what is it the consumer wants? Maybe it's about facing as a consumer also our own conscience of what we're happy to buy or not.
Yeah, that's my point. That's my view, actually. If we are not comfortable, I mean, if you want to have the whole process that is, you know, is everything is fine and dandy, you have as a consumer, you have to be educated enough to actually figure out those things. But I believe a lot of the consumers out there, they do not know. They're like, oh, shiny stuff, let's buy it instead.
Yeah. And quite frankly, as consumers, there's a lot of things we don't want to know. Like most of the food that we buy, unless you're a rich person in San Francisco and you go to farmers market or to Whole Foods getting organic stuff, even when it's written free-range chicken, just type that on Google and you will see what it looks like. It's not exactly a happy-go-lucky chicken in a vast, a field. It's not this at all. When you go to McDonald's, eat the food, if you look at the material from which they make the nuggets, it's actually quite horrific. Most of the food, basically is using a lot of strange ways to even farm crops or raise animals. So there's a lot of things that we think we want transparency, but if we had it, we might not be so much happier.
Yeah, true. So I was actually quite amazed that you went in the food angle, because that's usually something I would actually compare it to in terms of...
Yeah,
if you want free-range chicken, you want to kill the chicken itself. And how many people actually have seen a chicken being slaughtered? And I don't think a lot of consumers will actually eat chicken if that's the case.
Oh, yeah. No, that's I would say the killing of the chicken might not be the worst part. Is to look at what the chicken looks like before it's killed. That's not a normal chicken. It's in most cases.
Okay.
Well,
like I said, this is basically it's important in terms of like Foxconn do employ 700 over million people, but at the same time, if you look at the whole China whole, this is really just one of, it's not really the biggest story. I mean, it's a lot of stuff that China could done will do in the future.
Yeah, I mean, conditions will improve and because of consumer demand and because of better economic conditions in China, but it's not going to be instantaneous. And with the current economic climate, frankly, if people decide not to buy stuff, you could say it's going to put in danger a few Chinese families, right?
Yeah,
exactly. if people decide to, okay, we'll pay more, then most likely less people will be able to buy. So it's a complex problem. It's a complex problem.
Yeah, and I don't know whether there's a solution, but we'll be posting this thing up next. But the other thing, I don't think there's a solution, and essentially Yahoo retaining its shares in the joint venture in Japan.
So there have been some discussion about that, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a lot of changes in Yahoo, and Speedy will usually deny it. Yeah, they are moving stuff, they're doing stuff. But recently it has been announced in the next web that Yahoo's in talk with to withdraw its joint venture in Japan and with SoftBank. So, Ben, do you have any insights on this?
I've been looking at Yahoo for quite some time in terms of what's its market value, and more than 2/3 of Yahoo's market value was actually due to its Asian assets, so the share in Alibaba Group and the share in Yahoo Japan. The fact is that basically Yahoo could almost sell all its operations and just operate as a holding company of those shares, and might be better off doing that in the future. However, depending on who's controlling Yahoo, they might want to instead offload those Asian assets, which are worth billions of dollars, and do something with the money to try to recover some position in the U.S. market. The problem is that SoftBank doesn't seem to be so interested in buying the remaining share of Yahoo. It's about a third of Yahoo Japan, so it's quite pricey on SoftBank. Might have better use of its cash at the moment. Other than that, there's not a whole lot of companies who would be able to acquire that. So it could be some US fund, or it could be guys like DST, but I'd be surprised, because DST is mostly interested in non-listed assets.
Yeah.
So they've been looking at buying shares from Alibaba, but I don't think Yahoo as a listed company Yahoo Japan would really interest them. So this is kind of an interesting situation that basically Yahoo's in a way still has a third of the most dominant portal in Japan, which is a very large economy. And doesn't know what to do really with it.
Do you know how much is Yahoo Japan worth? I mean, there's estimated it's a billion. I mean, there's several estimations.
I think about six. I think it was $6 billion. It's a listed company, so you just need to check the stock price. I can do that. I'll check it while we discuss.
Okay. Yeah. There's something I can't find out at this point in time. Okay. So Yahoo has its problems to fix, and I think Nintendo is also having some issues. Also recently reported in the next one, Nintendo's quarterly profit is sinked by 61% as it prepares for $580 million annual loss. So,
they've been suffering.
That's actually really sad. I'm a big fan of Nintendo, and I don't know, is it because that the Wii was really gimmicky and it couldn't... as usual, Nintendo is, it starts strong, then it usually dwindles down compared to the PS3 and the Xbox.
The way I see it is that the Wii did really, really well. It's been around for a while now. So they haven't released a new product for quite some time. And now the problem for game consoles, especially casual gaming consoles, mm-hmm. is the massive, massive competition they get from smartphones and tablets.
Yep. Do you see a way out of this? I mean, Nintendo is supposedly going to launch the Wii U soon, and that is going to be the next generation console. When I was researching about the Wii U, I wasn't too impressed in terms of the stuff that they do. It seems like a very tiny progression in terms of what the Wii is capable of doing.
Yeah, I didn't look into details into the specs, but I think it's going to be still difficult to compete with smartphones. Soon you'll be able to get an Android phone for less than $100 on a platform where lots of people are working on.
Yeah.
And where the average game or average content costs like a 99 cents to a few dollars.
Compared to the $20, the $50.
Yeah, because it's a different distribution model. So Nintendo is said to be working on its own distribution network for the handheld consoles, but it's going to be very difficult to attract enough developers on the quality content. Just to conclude on that, I'm afraid that Nintendo is kind of a... it's a traditional type of publisher on hardware developer who's trying to make the transition to a new world.
So it's also reported that Nintendo is going to try to build their own phone. I have no idea how to say, but it's really sad to see this company go if they do not find a way to evolve. And they've been really hesitant of actually producing more games on the iPhone or the Android because they find it cheapens the game. This company has been around since the 1889. So it started off as selling cards, if I'm not mistaken, and then they move on to selling games. So, yeah, I'm really going to, this is not the end, but if Nintendo's go, I'll be really sad.
Yeah, I mean, it's... The world has been changing a bit too fast for hardware companies, and the combination of hardware, software, and content is really hard to master. And I don't really see how Nintendo could pull it off successfully with a phone, because you need to control really, really well software. You need to understand telecom. You need to basically develop an entirely new distribution channel for your products. You're not going to buy your phone the same place you're going to buy a game console. So it's going to be tricky. Some game companies, like Konami, for example, have been doing the transition differently, or Sega. Mm-hmm. But Konami is interesting because they were doing purely games, right, especially console games and arcade games. And since about last year, they make a lot more money with social games, especially mobile social games. They have million sellers in Japan, and they decided to basically transition to that as a main business. So it's quite surprising that a traditional game publisher becomes like a social game publisher. But I think that's at the moment for surviving, that's kind of one of the way out.
Yeah, if you look at EA, they're also trying. I mean, they have title. They are doing quite well, but looking at the market valuation compared to Zynga is totally different.
Yeah, it tells a different picture. I mean, also the growth of the sectors are not comparable. Like the console market is still okay, but compared to the social gaming or mobile gaming, this is it's not comparable.
Okay. So let's move on to the final story. Rocket Internet. Ben, you would know them. They have recently expanded into Asia, and they launched Zalora in Malaysia, Indonesia, and soon to be Singapore. So you're familiar with these guys, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm mostly familiar with one of their competitors called Team Europe, also from Germany, and also kind of a startup factory. Mm-hmm. So those are the two most famous players in that type of approach.
Okay, and so these guys are essentially famous for looking at Western ideas and just copying them around in Europe.
Actually, I think they're looking at ideas everywhere, but they're looking mostly at successful ideas and arbitration opportunities. Like, to give an example, so you're probably familiar with Guild.
Yep.
So before Guild, in Europe, in Paris, in France, there was a very successful company called Vente Privée that was doing also private sales. And if my memory is correct, Guild actually modeled themselves after the French Vente Privée. Mm-hmm. And now the Germans from Rocket Internet are taking similar models and taking them to markets that U.S. companies don't approach. So I think what they're very interesting is that they're very good at localizing things, and they are very good at operations. So when you have basically the business plan is written because it's already been proven, and they just... Actually, I would say they just implement and localize. But frankly, this is the most difficult. Mm-hmm. This is the most difficult. And in some cases, actually, for example, in the case of Japan, Groupon entered Japan in a very interesting way. So Japan had a few. I discussed with a friend of mine actually, who's an investor in Japan, and they were looking for local Groupons to invest in. So they discussed with like different teams who were doing local Groupons, and they were not really convinced by any of the teams they met. So they were investors, but they had like an operational experience.
Yeah.
So they thought, okay, we have cash because we're about to invest it in a Groupon copycat.
Yeah.
We have operational experience, and we can hire and find people. We have the business plan. So they decided to build it themselves. So they did a little bit like Rocket Internet or Team Europe. So they built their own Groupon for Japan, and that worked pretty well. And then Groupon approached them and said, okay, we're talking to all the local clones, and yours seem to be the most interesting. We'd like to buy it. So they managed to strike a deal, and Groupon actually bought them after less than a year.
Wow.
So that was a really, really good deal for them. But what happened after is that while they were running the Japanese Groupon, guess who was the guy in charge of international expansion at Groupon? Well, that was one of the Samway brothers from Germany, who was actually in charge of internationalization, because the guys in U.S. didn't know how to do it, and because they had acquired the German clone and got the Samway brothers basically as part of the executives.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, my friend was reporting about Japan to the Samway brothers for Groupon. And so that was an interesting situation. But it also shows another thing, is that even clones are often depicted in a bad light.
Yeah.
But frankly, nobody really has ownership of any idea. Like what? Who could, should Guild be considered a copycat, or is it just a different implementation of an idea? Like, ideas don't really have the nationality. And even the first company to be successful with an idea is rarely the first one to have tried it. So what's interesting here is that the reason Groupon bought a clone in Japan is and the best performing one is because it de-risks massively the entry strategy. Imagine they try to enter by themselves. They have to find an executive who's motivated enough, who's knowledgeable enough, and the chances to fail are very high. Whereas if they buy, even at a premium, a company that's already on the right track, mm-hmm. they actually lower the risk dramatically. So in that sense, even for companies who are facing clones, it's part of the landscape, and it's a natural way of things. And second, it can be an opportunity to expand on the lower the risk of market entry.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think looking at proper clones is a really smart way to exit. But I mean, that we have to wait for Bernard to come in to have a long discussion about this in terms of. Yeah. Okay, cool. So, Ben, thanks for actually joining us on the show, actually. And
my pleasure.
Yeah, I know you'll be traveling. We'll hope to actually get you on next round again. And thanks for your wonderful insight. So, where can actually people get hold of, where they can join Daydeed and what can they do?
Yes, so since a bit more than a week ago, we actually opened the service to anybody with a Facebook account, so they just need to go to daydeed.com, like one good deed per day, mm-hmm. daydeed.com. And what can they do there? So mainly it's about a simple way to get advice from your friends when you need something that's important to you. There's a lot of things for which we ask friends rather than Google. For example, let's say you're looking for a dentist. You can type dentist Malaysia on Google, and you're not going to find a very trustable answer. You'd much rather ask your cousin or your friend or colleague who can give you this information. But if you try to do that on Facebook and Twitter, the chances are that they won't notice. And the second problem is if you ask to people one by one, just by meeting them or calling them, you don't know who has the answer. So it's much, I found it's easier to put it to basically design it the other way, that you say, you tell what you want, what you're looking for, and people who know you, and if they have an answer, they can jump on it and help you with that. So yeah, you can try it out. There's a lot of examples already. And we already solved some of the problems of the users thanks to their friends. So try it out. Daydeed.com.
Oh, so one more thing. Can I ask how many people are in the service? Or do you want to review this?
Sure. So we've been testing in closed beta to see if the service was understandable enough to open it to a larger audience. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, we just have a few hundred people. Because we just opened, but we should be pushing a bit more forward to get in the thousands in the next few weeks.
All right, fantastic. This is actually a wonderful program, actually. I've been using it to actually try to find guests for DWI and other stuff. So if you are on Daydeed, just look me up. Is my URL on? What's my URL for Daydeed? I can't remember.
Uh-huh. So that should be just your daydeed.com, and then behind that is your Facebook name, because we leverage the Facebook social graph.
Okay, so all they need to do is just to sign in on Daydeed. I like the layout of the new design.
Oh, thank you so much.
Okay, so and where can people actually get a hold of you actually?
So they can either contact me via the service. So I have a running request for feedback, so it's very visible. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, they can just email me, either benjamin@plus8star.com or benjamin@daydeed.com.
Okay. Your Twitter handle is?
My Twitter is at @benjaminjoff.
All right. Fantastic. So just another reminder, if you want to get a free audiobook from Audible, go to audibletrial.com/DWIA and this is valid for 14 days. If you want to cancel it before 14 days, you can still keep the book. Okay? So that's me from This Week in Asia. You can find me on, well, Bing Me, as usual, Bing Cervantes, CRVNTUS. Or you can actually just you know, look for me at Daydeed. So I can't find, well, it's probably Daniel at Daydeed. No, sorry. Daydeed.com/Cervantes, I believe. Oh, let me try it again. I can't remember. No, it's not. Is it /user/Cervantes?
Just give me a second.
No, I think, yeah, I got it. So it's daydeed.com/users/Cervantes. And if you have any feedback for our show, you can always drop us an email, info@thisweekinasia.net, or just drop us a review on iTunes. All right, thanks for listening to This Week in Asia. Bye, guys.
Cheers.
Bye. Hi, sorry, just want to also add that it's two events that we are supporting and will be there. Startup Asia happening this 2nd and 3rd of February. And Echelon for 2012 is actually happening, and their class I'll tweak a bit, but they are looking for submission. So if you're interested in Echelon, just head over to E27. And if you're interested in Startup Asia, head over to Pandora Center. We will link in the show notes. Thanks. Bye.